principal, whether it be head of household or head of the small business, is the target, right? It's a hyper-targeted events are what we're seeing now. It's used to be like accidental losses, you know, people kind of getting into jams by accident, or, you know, information being disclosed accidentally. Now it's all hyper-targeted, and, you know, the social engineering is super sophisticated. And that leads to a variety of vectors, right, and attack surface issues. So what really we see a lot of commonality between small business and household risk, quite different from corporate risk.
Do you want to hear about the latest developments in the cyber market and learn best practices and thought leadership from cyber insurance and security experts? We talk all things cyber insurance industry, international growth, cyber claims, and more. Welcome to the Cybersecurity and Insurance Leaders Podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, Matt Cullinaugh. Pleasure to have you on. I said good morning and good afternoon because we're in different time zones, and I assume that you may not know what time zone you're in after traveling all around the world yourself. So wanted to start, I'll kick it off with that. So yeah, why don't we, I always like to just have people kind of talk about themselves first and as a quick introduction, and then we can go from there.
Sure. It's Matt Kleine here. Great to be with you, Anthony. Okay. So I'm the head of global cyber insurance for now TransUnion. But prior to that, I was CEO of CyberScout, who's the entity that TU acquired. Was CEO for about 14 years or so. But before that, was in the insurance industry for the first part of my career, working with Travelers and Allianz and MetLife in a variety of roles, but primarily managing claims and claims litigation. The second part of that, doing a lot of product development work for PNC products in the industry. So good to be here.
Cool. Great. Well, thanks for that intro. I guess you've talked a bit about it, but what more could you tell me about your company and the way it looks today? And your role as well. Sorry.
Yeah, totally. So now we were a privately held company for, you know, almost 18 years until we were acquired by TransUnion last year. So TransUnion, if you don't know, is a kind of a global credit reporting agency that supplies, you know, credit data for a variety of verticals and markets. They have a specific insurance division that has all sorts of data and data insights for the market, for underwriting, claims, kind of fraud evaluation, kind of a number of different marketing, a number of different fronts. And we are now their cyber arm. So Our go-to-market is really delivering kind of expert cyber solutions for the insurance industry. And generally, we go at that by working with your average PNC company writes, you know, personal lines or small commercial lines, and we help them build and deliver and then manage cyber solutions for their customers.
Okay, great. Sounds good. Are there any specific geographies that you're focused on?
Yeah, that's honestly what's been the most exciting part. You know, we're based in the U.S. We started in the U.S. And because this risk is so ubiquitous, it's kind of so worldwide, you know, we've been spreading across geographies. We're now on every continent and in about, what, we're up to about 30 countries that we support, about 10 languages. So really the need is everywhere, most insurers want to do something around cyber, but they just don't have the know-how and they're worried about capacity and reinsurance. And so we help them kind of build and deliver those programs. So it's been growing worldwide.
Yeah. That's interesting. I knew you were pretty international. I didn't realize how international. Sounds pretty exciting. Are there, any size clients you focus on in particular? Either from partners or people you're actually helping, you know, on some of the work you do.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, our core business is really, you know, we're kind of probably the opposite end of where most cyber insurance service providers, vendors are, where we cater to households, you know, to kind of consumers and their personal cyber risks, and SME, small businesses and micro businesses and their cyber risks. And that's through the insurance partners we have. And then we have another team that works on our behalf that focuses on incident response for large market corporate cyber. We have kind of dual tracks going, but the core of our business is really on small business support and consumer household support.
Okay, interesting. So just I guess, what would you consider, you know, specific to cyber, specific to the things that you're doing? So maybe not TransUnion as a whole, but you're sort of the part you're focused on. What would you say your strength is when it comes to cyber and working in insurance?
Yeah, for us, like from day one, like it's always been kind of white glove, 24/7, you know, service support and kind of crisis management, but really with a heavy dose of advocacy. Mm. So with our model, what we really hope for is being a helpline for businesses and consumer households. So they reach out to us, connect with us, try to get support before things turn into a broader incident. And so that kind of hand holding, that kind of white glove approach has been our, you know, you've been with us since day one. And what we've basically done is just evolve with the risks. So right. 20 years ago, it was consumer identity theft and fraud was really what was hitting the market as kind of the top white collar crime. And, you know, those types of risks just kept evolving and growing. And so we've stayed up with that over the times.
Okay. Yeah, that's it's interesting. I think, as you said earlier, it's probably pretty different than what the history is of a lot of other companies or the focus of a lot of other companies coming at it from small to large. I guess, along those lines, what would you say are some of the differences you see between maybe personal, small, and large when, you know, cyber clients?
Yeah, what's interesting is that there's a definite thread, right? Because the principal, whether it be head of household or head of the small business, is the target, right? It's a hyper targeted events are what we're seeing now. It's used to be like accidental losses, you know, people kind of getting into jams by accident or, you know, information being disclosed accidentally. Now it's all hyper targeted and, you know, the social engineering is super sophisticated. And that leads to a variety of vectors, right? And attack surface issues. So what really we see a lot of commonality between small business and household risk, quite different from corporate risk. So that's where we see more of the delta in that, you know, you can use all the technical terms and cyber terms, but what it comes down to is financial fraud, scams, mm-hmm. you know, this kind of repeatable event types that, you know, the perpetrators are going after. And once they hit home on a few, they just keep going and going and going until that door closes and then they pivot to the next thing. So it's interesting to see how much common type of losses there are amongst, you know, small business and households.
Okay. Yeah, that it makes a lot of sense that they'd be similar in a lot of ways. The small businesses being relatively unmanaged, and then as you get to really large ones, they've got big security teams, and that probably looks a lot different.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think, just in terms of, you know, you mentioned some of the change over the decades and how that's influenced your strategy. I guess just looking at this year, like more recently, what would you say, or the last couple of years, maybe post COVID or the start of the pandemic, what are some of the changes you've seen in terms of cyber attacks? Like, how are things shifting?
Yeah, I think first, I think that, and maybe this is underreported, I don't know, I haven't seen much of it, but like obviously ransomware is in 2019, 2020, 2021, you know, was the top claim type, and, you know, especially for commercial. And so that took up, you know, most of our activity, a big chunk of our activity. But honestly, this year, we've seen a complete drop off in ransomware. And you know, there's a variety of theories around that, including Russia and Ukraine and all that activity that's happened. But really, we've still seen a 20%+ increase in our claims year over year, but it's really shifted to kind of hyper-targeted social engineering events. That's now the top claims. So that mix has changed. There's still ransomware cases, but it's honestly nowhere near where it was last year. So
I'd been wondering a lot about that myself because I completely agree that when you look in the press or when you see things out and kind of maybe in the broader world, it's kind of hard to see what's really going on with ransomware. But I think when you go to the industry events or, you know, you talk to people, it's like, oh yeah, you know, half the number of ransomware claims or a third the number of ransomware claims, you know, maybe claims volume similar to before, but a very different impact. It's kind of interesting. Yeah.
I think that's kind of our responsibility in the market because you don't want people focusing on the wrong things, right? So you know, I think we have to keep adapting and educating where the trends are. And honestly, I haven't seen a lot of reporting on it. And, you know, we've been trying to talk to our customers that, you know, it's training your employees, you know, making sure that, you know, the households that you're insuring with this are up to speed on what to look out for, because the scams are getting so sophisticated. It's like really hard to detect impersonation. The impersonations are like deep fake times 100, you know, just really, really sophisticated.
Yeah. It's, I do really wonder what's going on, but I think it is a positive thing that we've seen a shift away from ransomware, because the amount of money that we're making wasn't worth the damage, you know, like they were causing so much more damage than the actual benefit to them. And so it just wasn't, it wasn't good, you know, obviously,
right. Because black market, they're business people. Right. So, so they want to like, you would think want to leave like a light footprint in their wake. But
exactly. It's like, hey, could you do something a little bit less destructive, you know, to make your money? Although I'd always looked at it. And one thing I talk to people about a lot is, well, at least those same organizations, if they're like organized crime organizations, at least they're not running, you know, illegal drugs. They're not running weapons. There's not, you know, sort of the physical crimes. I'll take a ransomware attack any day over, you know, the kind of, you know, sort of physical crimes. So I guess it's all relative. Hopefully we, you know, move to less destructive and more financially oriented crimes as time goes on. And so hopefully the impact is less on everyone. I mean, scams aren't great though.
That's what you're saying. Like, you know, crime. I think that that's the part that I don't see enough of in this cyber insurance space, that like, let's talk about the outcomes and what's really happening, you know, versus a lot of cyber terminology and kind of confusing people with, you know, what the technical term is for that attack type, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. They are all sort of variants of crime, and they are doing it for economic reasons. So I guess shifting gears a little bit, just thinking about, you know, maybe more the underwriting side of things, you know, we're talking, started out sort of talking IR and claims. What would you think, you know, for small market or personal lines, what are your thoughts on how that should be underwritten?
Yeah, so we've been doing this for a long time. So we've honestly have been involved in launches that have been lead balloons, you know, failed from the start. And so kind of learned the hard way around what works and what doesn't work. And I think, you know, generally speaking, the insurance markets, when they put all the time and effort to launching a new product, cyber or any other type of product, I think there's often a lot of there's a fallacy that as soon as you launch it, it's going to sell like hotcakes, or like you've done your job, like, you know, move on to the next thing. And what we found with cyber, like, there's such an awareness curve in the markets, like amongst the households, amongst the small business, even the brokers and the agents selling it don't really understand it. And even when they get around to understanding the risk a bit more, they don't understand what the solutions do and what the coverage is for. And so what we found is that when you go to market with an optional program, you really need to think about how to market it. And so what we generally do with our partners is have them look at everything from a book standpoint, from a full scope of risk standpoint, and determine whether they can get kind of an MVP type solution out to their masses, and then build upon that. So it's kind of a spread of risk approach. It gets the awareness out. It gets everybody talking about it. It becomes a core kind of component of their general offering. And then they can model that over time and upsell over time or do different things over time. That's the way, and maybe even if it's, we've seen a lot of insurers subsidize the first year. So they'll gift the program or embed the program for year one, and then they ultimately recoup their expenses and grow their books over time. So that's where we've seen more success. And it's sometimes counterintuitive for the average insurer, you know, to kind of talk about things this way. But if you're giving things kind of across the book of business kind of democratically, what we find is it gets everybody talking about it. And once you have them, then you can educate and then you can pivot. I think that's one thing. And the second thing I would say is, these products need to be evolve over time. And so I think that it isn't a set it and forget it. Like, you launched it, good. Like, we find every 4 or 5 years, if you're not upgrading your solution, your insurance cover, it's getting stale. and whether the limits are inadequate or the coverages are inadequate, or there's a new trend type that's not covered that should be covered, or the competition has outpaced you one way or the other. So it is something that you kind of need to iterate off of.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of folks don't really pay attention to.
Yeah, I think maybe especially focused on personal lines. I feel like the SME cover, I understand fairly well, but like maybe shifting on the personal lines side, what are some of the things you've seen shift over the last few years in terms of coverages? Like how has it changed? You know, what have you seen? How has it changed? What are your thoughts on different kinds of cover? Maybe there's a few questions in there, but yeah.
Yeah, I think in the U.S., it's a kind of a distinct issues in the U.S. So the U.S., especially for home insurance, ID theft type coverages have been in place since 2005, 2006. So most of the market has some sort of ID theft solution. But really, those coverages are inadequate for kind of cyber risk of today. And so we've seen most insurers start to move towards kind of modifying that cover or replacing it with a personal cyber offering. And the cyber offerings tend to have financial fraud cover, so wire transfer fraud cover. They tend to have system compromise cover. They tend to have cyber bullying cover, like first party support for families going through those types of crises. So that's kind of getting into more modern coverages.
Right.
And the rest of the world, they're launching with a personal cyber cover with, you know, five or six coverage heads of cover in the form right off the bat. And then I think in addition to that, what we're finding is that, you know, you're going to market with risk management tools, not just insurance. And so it could be dark web monitoring tools or password protectors or credit monitoring, like something to give you a leg up on early detecting the situation. And then the kind of tied to that are kind of expert support, you know, kind of crisis management support one way or another that goes supra to the claims support. And so those are generally the features. And so if it's a new market, they're kind of, they tend to go with a bundle of all those things. If it's an older market, it's kind of a retrofit to get there.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. I know I'd seen some of the personal lines policies and, you know, we've got, I like the things. I think the first time I saw the bullying cover, I thought, oh, that's really clever. Like cyberbullying and sort of, I've seen, you know, that, like you mentioned, the kind of support for people that are, you know, sort of psychological support and things like that.
Honestly, that's become a really attractive marketing piece too. Mm. Like I think cause it gets into reputational risk. So it's not just crime cover. It's not just the financial fraud aspects or the scam aspects. So, you know, the case types would be like, you know, your Facebook account has been taken over or somebody's impersonating you one way or another or kind of besmirching you or your family. We've seen some interesting cases that have come in where, you know, it's the alarm sounds and the family doesn't know what to do. And so it's not just like your typical kind of playground stuff, your scholastic stuff where there's kind of like physical bullying turning into online thing. It's a lot of kind of online reputation damage that we're seeing. So
we've seen that a few times for like account recoveries, you know, small businesses have an Instagram account or whatnot. And it's surprisingly difficult and we'll see what, you know, all the news, you know, things in the news around layoffs in tech and these companies reducing their size. You know, the level of support really isn't, there's not really the formal level of support from some of the social media companies. Like if the automated stuff works, you're great. But if you get stuck, if something goes wrong, it can really be a challenge to get your accounts back. And like you said, you know, reputation damage, people get their account compromised and there's, you know, it's spamming everybody or, you know, they're posting, you know, improper things on their Facebook, for example. And it's kind of like, whoa, what's going on with so-and-so?
And we're also invested, right? Like it's a part of us now, like and it's almost more real than reality a lot of times. Yeah. So the, you know, the stress levels that rise like automatically, you feel like you can't put it back in the bottle, right? Like, it's like, this is out of control and I don't know how to respond to it. Alone can, you know, capture what's going on and fix it, you know?
Absolutely. So just in terms of, you know, maybe shifting gears again a bit, you know, the cyber insurance industry as a whole, you know, what would you say that we probably are not doing enough of, or maybe to put it a little bit more positively, what would you like to see more of in cyber?
That's a great question. You know, generally I think it's that kind of like, let's blow up conventional wisdom. Like, this is still a new product type. And I think we tend to just all kind of say the same things over and over. And we are always trying to look at things from, you know, kind of a counterintuitive lens. But I think, and it's, you know, often very US centric, right? So because this is where kind of the products originated. And so I think having a global view is something that I would, you know, I think it helps no matter what. And I think there's cultural differences, there's regional differences. I'll give you an example. We have cases in the Netherlands right now where it's literally like the scammer starts out with a social engineering attack. Let's say it's a bank impersonation, and then they show up on your doorstep. And so they usually are kind of going after older
folks. Yeah.
They're on your door saying, we need to shred your card. There's been an attack against your accounts. And they're taking the card and doing a hand switch and giving them a new card that's fake. They're seizing laptops.
Wow.
And so it's like, just conceptually, like, you wouldn't think that would ever happen in the US, but it's a good educator for, like, the hackers, the threat actors are really understanding the local market and modifying tactics for those markets. And so I think having that global purview, it really helps, you know, kind of having you think different around how to respond to these risks.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think, I guess because of maybe the size of the country, or it's interesting. They'll be that local. Like, that's incredible.
Like, too trusting. And even like from a scaling standpoint, for the hacker, it's not that scalable.
Right. But I guess, but you know, if these are like,
you can harvest like a full bank account on one go, you know, maybe it pays, you know.
Obviously there's some risk to it, you know, just like there is with any, you know, sort of more physical elements of the crime. There's a lot more risk, but I guess, you know, the revenue must be there. You know, they get 5 people a month, and, you know, that's enough to pay for whatever they want to buy. And maybe small crime groups, you know, like, not like the big organized ones we see in some countries. Yeah, that's
so I think similarly to kind of looking at things globally, like, what, you know, in talking with a lot of forensic partners that we work with, and even in our shop, you know, some will say that if you look at what's happening in small market commercial, it's sometimes an antecedent to what happens on the bigger market. So like because corporates are getting more secure over time around these risks, going after the little guys that are often vendors of the bigger guys, you know, is an easier path to get into the corporates. And so you got to look at one to see what's happening with the other. And so I don't think there's a lot of that going on, where there's kind of that looking at things as a whole ecosystem, and how these risks correlate.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess, just in terms of, you know, you mentioned sort of service company. How are some of the ways you measure, you know, kind of what you're doing or what your team's doing?
Yeah. So this isn't, you know, your typical call center where you're just kind of measuring people on how quickly can you get off the phone.
Yeah.
Really dedicated case management. And so it's first of all, it's training the folks from a technical standpoint, so they have the technical capabilities to do incident response, and to manage fraud events and to be able to process fraud events, and resolve those, you know, through whatever regulatory process that's needed and paperwork that's needed. But they're also the heavy dose of empathy that's needed, because most of the time these are, you know, unsophisticated folks, you know, when it comes to cyber. So you got to really listen to understand why they're calling, what the issues are, and then slowly walk them through a resolution process. So there's that advocacy that is a heavy dose of just, you know, caring. And so when we first started the business, it was really interesting. Our fraud team, our original team, worked together without management to come up with kind of like a code of conduct. And their motto was, treat everybody like you would want your mother to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a really a throughput for us from day one.
Yeah.
And the way we measure that kind of from a technical standpoint is we do survey everybody that we help. Okay. And so we, you know, are always measuring that. And so thank goodness, you know, year over year, we tend to have a 99.5%+ satisfaction rate. But we're usually asking them, how does that inure to their loyalty to the insurance company? And that's okay. That's the other main measurement that we have. And that tends to be a super high score as well. So we want to make sure that whatever we're doing, we're kind of the caretakers of these policyholders, whatever we're doing, you know, makes the insurance company look good for right. support. Emerging risks. So there's all sorts of SLAs on time to respond and all of that. But at its core, I think the heart components are really important to us. Because I think that always is going to lead to high quality. If you're making sure that this is the person you're talking to, it's not, you know, don't be too technical or too rote, you know,
it's soft skills. I think it's, you know, especially if somebody suffered an incident, you know, they're a crime victim and having that empathy makes such a difference.
Yeah, totally. And honestly, it helps people. We found if you put that into the marketing around what it's all about, then people reach out before they get into jams. And so we're happy to take the false alarms. We're happy to take, hey, I've been thinking about this. Can you help me? Can you give me some advice? Like, we love those calls. Like, that to me is that's showing that things are working. So we are always looking at that ratio of, we call them proactive calls, but proactive cases versus reactive cases. And if we've got, you know, let's say 60% proactive coming in, we know the program's working right.
Okay. That's an interesting perspective on it. One of my favorite questions I like to ask everyone is, if you had 10 of your peers in a room, what question would you ask them?
Yeah. So for us, like, especially because we're in so many different markets and countries, I just love understanding especially the insurance partners, where they're at for their core business, what's keeping them up at night, put cyber aside. I want to know how their business is ticking, and whether it be a reinsurance partner we have, a reinsurance broker, or an insurance company. Knowing what trends they're dealing with helps us pivot around cyber, because for us, cyber is always kind of an ancillary component to what they're doing. And so we want to make sure that we're kind of a dovetail fit for what's going on in their world. And it helps to inform our marketing and our outreach. So you probably know, I mean, insurance folks love to talk about their business. And so we love to listen. And so, we our whole team that's kind of outward facing is just listen first, see where things are at, and then respond. And I think that when it comes to like other like service providers in the market, it's really just what trends are you seeing, kind of what mix of business are you seeing, what's a new kind of a social engineering scam that you're seeing that's you know growing. And so it's just sharing notes on case activity. Because often we can bring that back to our team and it helps us model kind of to go forward. So
model in terms of being able to figure out what you need to be ready for and that sort of thing.
And train, and maybe we do some research on something that we haven't seen much of, but if others are saying they're seeing more of it, you know, we'll start to see, well, why aren't we seeing that? Are there things we're seeing that they're not seeing? So.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, what would you, so just looking across the industry then, you know, what would you consider to be kind of the big challenge that you'd love to solve?
I think that when it comes to risk management, especially when the insurance partner is offering solutions for their customers, the adoption of those solutions proactively is just not where it needs to be. And so you can offer something, you can fund it, and we've like, you know, less than 10% adoption, or where people are actually downloading, enrolling, using it. So there's a gap there that I don't, maybe it's a traditional, like you have a kind of an arm's length relationship to your insurer, you know, for whatever you're being insured with. But I'd love to figure out a way to have that usability grow, risk management tools, because there's a lot of time and effort that gets put into it. And we've seen some pockets where there of success, where there is high penetration rates, high usage rates, but whether it be training, risk management tools, like anything prophylactic, we haven't seen, you know, those that are offered versus those that take it up. There's usually a mega gap. I don't know what the solve is universally, but that's what we're always trying to figure out, you know?
Yeah, I see. You know, I think people underappreciate how good a lot of the risk management tools have become connected into insurance because it's not like it was 10 years ago where some of the things were probably useful, but some of the others were just sort of, all right, let's throw that in there and see how it goes. I think nowadays they're pretty well refined, but it is so difficult and just to get people to adopt them.
Well, I'll give you an example. Like we used to see similar things when it comes to the reactive side to like the you know, either submitting a claim or calling in with an incident that in the past, it was more like they tried to fix it on their own and they tended to screw it up or, you know, like kind of get in shape. And then they would call and say, okay, we've got this problem. Help,
I blew my whole IT system up. I blew my computer up, whatever.
But we have seen that improve. Like we've seen more people call right off the bat. And so to me, there's hope for the proactive stuff because we've seen a considerable shift on that where we are getting cases early now. And I think it's probably the brokers and agents just saying, you got it. Like, this is a hot potato. If this is to happen, there's no DIYing it. We've got experts here that can help. That's what the products are for, you know? So some kind of that approach to the proactive side, like to make it the immediacy, like if you use this tool, you can avoid X, Y, or Z, you know, there's still that gap, but we're trying, we keep trying.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's worth trying and, you know, keep pushing. So I guess, just current events, you know, in cyber, what do you think is really interesting? What do you find interesting going on today?
You know, well, there's, you know, at the macro level, like we work with a lot of reinsurance partners. So the capacity issues and shifts and there seems to be a lot more capacity for personal cyber insurers. So we've seen a lot of new markets come in. We've seen a few move out too, or maybe they shifted their capacity to commercial lines or what have you. So there's just a lot more interesting activity at the reinsurance level around cyber and that's around the globe. So that to us is interesting because, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, there were just a few markets focused on this side of the business. And, we've seen that grow considerably. You know, the insurance products keep evolving. You know, I think a lot of the silent cyber issues with, you know, war cover and all of that, the exclusionary work that's going on and things. So we're monitoring that quite a bit. And obviously Lloyd's is driving that change. But we've seen kind of the U.S. kind of wait and see, right? And maybe they're taking advantage of kind of the renewal market and trying to get more business to them. So that activity is interesting.
It's interesting,
And then, you know, really for us, it's the new markets that are just really interesting and exciting to us. So we just had some big launches in the Philippines, in Malaysia, in Argentina. And so like adopting these solutions to new markets is just always interesting because there's things that pop up, like I said, that are culturally unique to certain countries versus others. And so you got to kind of configure the approach to the market, make sure you have resonance. So that's always the exciting challenge for us that we're always looking at.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I think international in particular is something that's really interesting. War exclusion is a funny one just because of all the conversations, just being where I am, you know, wandering around Lloyd's, you know, having some of the conversations I've had is fun. But
you on Team Munich Re or Team Beasley?
It's like, cool. It's like, they're not getting the middle of this one.
I mean, it's complicated. Because once you start putting more verbiage into exclusionary language, it makes you more susceptible to litigation. Like, you know what I mean? Like, put too much in, there's a lot to pick at. You don't put enough in, you know, it's too broad to be applied. Right. You know,
No, absolutely. I think sometimes when I see people not from the insurance industry talking about all this is, you know, just an attempt to to get the policy to not cover anything because it's always state sponsored, you kind of step back and think, well, wait a minute, you're 100% going to end up getting sued. And a lot of people are going to end up getting sued if that's what you're actually selling.
Right.
Something that isn't going to pay.
How do you prove it? How do you prove it? Like that's,
yeah.
Right?
It's attribution so hard.
That's the challenging part. And how do you prove it in a timing of event management? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think war exclusion is interesting because it's the kind of thing, you know it when you see it. Yeah, this feels different. This feels like cyber war. But then you step back and you go, right, how do I define that in an insurance policy? It's like, well, you can't exactly write. We know it when we'll see it. And that's how we're going to decide whether to pay your claim or not.
Well, I'll tell you, I used to handle like large loss environmental claims.
Yeah.
So like the industry approach to excluding environmental, I think it's educational for cyber.
Yeah.
They went to the, you know, pollution exclusion. They had the absolute pollution exclusion. They had the total pollution exclusion. And honestly, the what got the total, it became a one-liner.
Yeah.
Like, we will not cover any pollution-related exposure. Like, and before, there was like
three levels. Yeah. So
like, the simpler, the better sometimes.
Just make it easy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, well, I guess it's been fun talking with you about all that. I've got a few more kind of closing questions I like to ask people, and I think it's interesting for the audience. First one, people always have the funnest stories on how they got into insurance or, you know, and or legal. You know, how did you find yourself doing this kind of work?
So insurance in general, like, started right out of university. So, and I was a politics major. And okay. I grew up in Hartford, which is, you know, historically insurance. The insurance capital of insurance companies. Yeah. So I was working for a local congresswoman, volunteering when I graduated. And and I was trying to figure out, you know, how to pay off student loans and all of that. So so she gave me an intro to Travelers Law Department, a colleague that she went to school with. And so I literally was through volunteering for a local politician. And I started out in the Travelers Law Department a special liability unit that was focused on large exposures. It was an interesting way to start the career. Travelers is great from an educational standpoint. It's a, you know, really good rigor. But starting kind of analyzing the coverages itself and from a liability standpoint was, to me, a great way to start because I saw kind of when things go wrong, when products go wrong, when they get misinterpreted. You know, and so it gives you a good perspective. It really helped me move into product development because I could see, you know, over time, like, okay, if you do these things bad, if you do these things good. So that was a great way to start the career.
Yeah. No, that's definitely an interesting way to start. I don't think I've known anyone else who, you know, has quite that direction. So I guess the other question I like to ask is, what do you recommend to anyone who wants to have a successful career in the industry?
I think in life, in work, whatever, it's curiosity. Like, you got to have curiosity. You know, you really, you know, that, I guess that comes with passion for what you're doing. But if you're not passionate about something, then you got to change it. You got to change career, change jobs. But I think to me, it's like, always like a child, like always be curious around what's going on and probe and ask questions. And, you know, if you're not at that level of engagement, I don't think you're going to be as successful as you could be. And so that's when I get new folks joining. That's what I'm looking for when I'm recruiting is do they have that spark? And, I look at it as like intersection thinking. So when having people that are passionate, it may not be work. They may have some sort of personal interest. If they have a deep passion for it, in my mind, that shows that they have a heavy dose of curiosity. And so we're always looking for folks that have that spark. And I think that would be my advice for insurance industry or anywhere. Like, it helps you wake up in the morning with a smile and, you know, and not having things be rote over time. So
yeah, curiosity and passion. Cool. Well, it was absolutely a pleasure chatting with you today, Matt, and thanks for for coming on the show.
Awesome. Love what you're doing, Anthony. I appreciate the time.
Thanks.
If you want to learn more about our host Anthony or his company Acerius, visit acerius.com. ASCERIS.com. Thanks to our friends at Savu for producing this episode with us. See you next time.